Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Nannies and mothers. They usually come from different neighborhoods, often different countries, certainly different income groups and social classes. They need each other and want each other, but have many reasons to resent and fear and judge and be suspicious of each other. Nannies are in the love business. Often the relationship works really well, including for the kids. Often it does not. Sometimes it descends to the nanny cam level. My first guest this hour is journalist Lucy Kalin, a nanny hiring mother. She is the executive editor of Marie Claire and now the author of a book called The Perfect Stranger, The Truth About Mothers and Nannies, published by Bloomsbury. Hi, Lucy. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
You make it clear at the start of your book how personal an issue this is for you. You felt angry and insecure when you heard another mom refer to nanny love as a mercenary kind of love. True story?
True story. It was a really sort of shocking moment for me. We were, waiting for our girls to finish their dance class, and it was our custom to sort of chat about everything under the sun. And when I told her about the book I was going to write about that sort of, potentially magical relationship that you strike up with the woman who's come in to, so gallantly help you out with this very difficult work, she just sliced right to the heart of it. She said, "But it's a mercenary love. You have to pay for it." And it was shocking to me. And, I'm not a proponent of or a side taker in the nanny wars, but it did give me this, the mommy wars, but it did give me this taste of what's at stake here. It's a very fraught terrain.
When you say the mommy wars, you mean the go to work versus work at home?
Sure. And the way, people who are not in your shoes can be skeptical about the choices you make. I mean, it's my plea to everyone that we stop with that, lay down the arms, and be as supportive as we can with each other. But it's hard.
So this book is part memoir, part journalism. Were you trying to work something out about your own insecurities by writing this book?
I think so. In a way, I certainly, as a journalist, looking for good stories and where are the real issues, that we all face as women and as people. It occurred to me at a certain point that one of the great issues was sort of like right in my own living room. We've had this wonderful woman who's come to help us out with our children 10 years now, and it's a great relationship in so many ways. But it's clear that it's delicate, it's fraught, it's potentially combustible. I mean, it doesn't combust, almost, it really never does, but I can see the potential for it. And it became very clear to me very quickly that this is something lots of women face. It's not just me.
You still have a nanny?
Yes, we do.
Has she read your book?
She has it. She carries it around. I'm not sure, if she's really gotten into it yet. She's quite circumspect. I brought her through, all the anecdotes that involved her, and, I interviewed her, so she certainly has a sense of what's in there. And I also know that she knows me awfully well. I think she knows what makes me tick, and I have a feeling she could predict pretty well what's going on in these pages.
You never had that mercenary conversation with her, I presume.
I just didn't. I don't think it applies, but I get where that other mother was coming from.
So we will open up the phones first this hour for anyone who works now or who has ever worked as a nanny. And by nanny, we'll take the definition in the book, which is doing full-time child care.
Yeah, the pros. I mean, a lot of times we refer to women who work a full, at least 50 hours a week for us as babysitters. That's common as well. But I really need it in the book to differentiate between the pros, like the woman that I have, and, the sort of 14-year-old gum snapper that babysitter seems to connote.
Right. Or even the older person who works maybe 15 hours a week, 20 hours a week babysitting while they're going to college or something like that. The real 8-to-6 or live-in nannies, do you come to love the children you care for? Is it a mercenary kind of love? What if you come to not like the children you care for? Have you ever come up against that? Do you tell the parents? 212-433-WNYC, just for current and former nannies right now, 212-433-9692. Does your nanny have kids?
Yes, she does. She has a daughter who's at this point is, I think, pretty close to 30. She has 3 children. And maybe anticipating your next question, it was important to me to not be asking someone, to come love my children and keep my home, you know, in order if it required her leaving her own child, perhaps in, you know, in Jamaica or the Philippines or wherever it might be. But of course, you know, joke's on me when I was explaining that to a prospective nanny one day about, you know, feeling very sort of, you know, high and mighty and good about my, you know, my liberal credentials and the fact that I would never ask that of anyone. And the candidate just fixed me with this look and just said, well, but she needs that job. You know, withholding that from her isn't helping anybody. And it was just such an you know, early example for me of how murky these waters were that I was stepping into.
Nannies go to work and leave their children with other people too.
Right. Sometimes they leave them in their home country thousands of miles away and they have their sisters or mothers taking care of them, and then they send a check, a big hunk of their check home to the family. Or they have them, as you say, in child care, you know, in Brooklyn or Queens or the Bronx or wherever. And it's a very complicated thing, I think, to ask somebody to do that, you know, so that they can come and cuddle and, you know, care for your child.
Lucy Kalin, my guest on WNYC. Her book, The Perfect Stranger, The Truth About Mothers and Nannies. And also with us briefly now, a nanny from Connecticut named Andrea. She's an immigrant from Uruguay in her late 20s. Andrea, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, everyone.
When did you come to the U.S.?
Well, that would be like 4 years ago.
And why did you come here?
Well, eventually, I'm following my dream. I'm a musician. So I really wanted to, you know, come here and do my own thing, come into music-wise. And, well, I ended up working as a nanny, which I was expecting to do, and I was really willing to because, you know, I had experience back in my country. I was a teacher in kindergarten, and I used to teach English for 3-year-old. So I've been always around kids, and, you know, that would work out perfect.
And that was your game plan. It sounds like that was your game plan, moving to this country, make money as a nanny while trying to make it in music.
Yeah, well, it's actually happening, so I'm really happy with everything right now.
That's fantastic.
That's good. What kind of music do you do?
Well, that would be heavy metal.
Excellent.
My nanny plays heavy metal. Not a lot of kids can say that.
That's the sequel.
How long have you been with your current family?
Right now, for this family, which I really love, everyone here, 2 years. Yeah, she was pregnant with the baby when I first got this job. And since then, you know, I've been working full-time for them, and then 3 days, some days, 2 days, somewhere else. So it's been nice. I can't complain about anything.
You don't have to tell me your salary, but what would you say is the going rate for a nanny in Connecticut these days, approximately, as far as you know?
Well, the income will be in between $12 and $15 per hour. That's as far as I know, right?
Mm-hmm. Benefits? You get paid vacation?
Yes, everything.
And Social Security and stuff like that?
Yeah, everything.
Uh-huh. Okay, so maybe you're in a minority that way. Do you want children of your own?
I'm not expecting that right now. I'm just going to wait a little longer. Life will tell me what to do with that. But, you know, I do love helping other people and, you know, putting my best will and my patience and, you know, I give everything to them, and, you know, it's equal for them as for me. We work out together pretty well, and I can't say that I have ever had a bad experience at all. I was a living nanny when I just came here, and everything was very different. Of course, I was just, you know, leaving my family behind. I got little brothers and sisters, so it was a little hard, you know, getting used to a new family and everything, but I cannot complain. Everyone was really welcoming. And
okay, just so my listeners know, what's the name of your band?
Excuse me?
What's the name of your band?
It's called Epica Clerica. It's not a crazy band. We get a lot of acoustic and nice melodies in there, and the lyrics are poetry. So it's not going to be a regular metal band that you're going to see around.
Stephanie, Andrea, thanks for coming on with us. Good luck.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
And still with us, Lucy Kalin, author of The Perfect Stranger, The Truth About Mothers and Nannies. And we'll take more of your nanny calls at 212-433 WNYC in a minute. One of the big issues you write about is trust and the impossibility, really, of knowing from a parent's perspective, and we'll get back to the nanny's perspective, what's really going on when you're at work. And your book has some nanny cam horror stories.
Right. You know, I feel that every mother has to do what she has to do to be comfortable in this, you know, arrangement that she's made. I mean, personally, I couldn't do it. I feel like there's a lot of denial and ambivalence that, you know, can sometimes motivate your desire to sort of wire up the house. And I felt that in our case, if I had to take that step, that maybe I wasn't yet, you know, owning my decision to go to work and trust someone with this big job. You know, that said, I think there are women who've rooted out real problems with the nanny cams. You know, it's something that a lot of them need to do. Although I do find and do write about in the book the fact that I think if you turn a camera on someone taking care of a small child for, you know, 10 hours a day, there are going to be moments when you're sort of shocked that they're not showering your child with love and cuddling them and kissing them, you know, endlessly, which, you know, they might do more of when you are around. And my question is, you know, to some extent, it's about the incredible standard that we hold them to. I mean, because it is, it's not like, are you, you know, filling your shipping orders efficiently or are you, you know, getting your paperwork done? It's our child and it's, you know, our desire for them to be the most loved kid in the world. And so I think that's where things get really tricky. Sometimes a mother sees on the nanny cam what she kind of wants to see, which is, you know, no one can do this job the way I can. And
sometimes,
you know,
that's what she's looking for.
I think so. And that's one way to find it. So it's a very complicated tool.
So do you think, did you come across a lot of parents who installed nanny cams just to see what was going on out of curiosity, not because they had some reason to be suspicious?
A number of mothers I talked to installed them because it was being done in their peer group, and they felt, well, what kind of a fool would I be to not do this thing that seems to be sort of standard now? And there were some really sweet stories that I heard. You know, one mother in particular told me about, you know, watching her nanny, you know, give the first birthday present to her daughter, whose birthday was that day, and it was her first bicycle, and her, you know, teaching her how to sort of pedal it around in the house, and then putting her down for a nap with, you know, kisses and hugs. And then, you know, there are other stories that were not so sweet. And, you know, it's...
Right. You wrote about one where somebody was slapping the kid around, and the parent had no idea prior.
Right. You know, but I also write about, you know, a woman who saw her nanny taking her lunch break and eating her sandwich at the table or whatever it was, and the baby's in the crib and kind of reaching out to her. And the mother was appalled, you know, that the baby, that the nanny didn't sort of, you know, I suppose, drag the baby out of the crib and put her on her lap and, you know, play with her while she's eating. And, you know, my feeling hearing that anecdote was, is this woman not entitled to a break at some point during this incredibly difficult, you know, shift? And as long as the baby's not in harm's way, you know, I don't see why she can't have that. And that's where I think we get into the area of nannies being held to unreal standards of perfection.
And that same mother might have turned around and ferberized her baby.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Who wants the mommy cam turned on them? That's, you know, a terrifying thought.
Anne Marie in Kearney, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi, Brian. I don't want to miss your show. And this is great because I used to be a nanny 25, 26 years ago. So I had two experiences to tell. I mean, I didn't want to be a nanny, but when I came, my English was obviously very bad, and I figured it was a way for me to learn English. And I took a couple jobs. One of them, the kids were very dysfunctional. The household was also very dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. So I just left. And the second one was I'm very dear still to them. Also, I miss the kids. I really love them. And because in the middle of my employment, by the way, they were also sponsoring me, I found out that the marriage that I thought was like the sample marriage that I had never seen in my parents, she turned to be an alcoholic and they turned to be divorced. Mm. So I had to take it full time for these kids. They probably grown up, probably, you know, over 30s at this point, and I miss them very much because I still keep in touch with father, And I had no idea what happened to these two kids, and he doesn't even know. So I guess the divorce take a toll on these children. Mm. I left because I had to move on, and I went to school. I became a dietitian. Like I said, again, I keep in touch with the father and his second marriage and his other kids, and I miss these kids. I really did, and especially because he broke my heart when I found out that they were getting divorced.
Mm. And I guess you're really a perfect example of how the nanny really becomes part of the family. You know things about this family that nobody else could possibly know.
Absolutely.
Well, I have to say something also, and I owe my profession. I hope Jim is here in this program, because I remember in my trying to speak English, and I was, you know, reading books because he was a very good reader. I learned English to them. So when I went to a school to apply for a university when I was 37, I didn't need to go through ESL or anything, because they said your English is decent enough, you know, to go to a university.
And they even
sponsored some of my profession to them.
Yes, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And you said they even sponsored you for your immigration status.
Well, actually, that didn't work because of the divorce. They moved to a urban area, and it didn't qualify. So, and that's actually one of the reasons why I left. And I get the amnesty to Reagan.
Thank you very much for calling us, Anne-Marie. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll continue in a minute with Lucy Kalin, author of The Perfect Stranger, The Truth About Mothers and Nannies. More calls from nannies on your experiences. And we can take some calls from mothers, too. But here's another thing we're going to bring up. Nannies, how do you say goodbye when you leave a family? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Do you tell them? Well, not really a relative. Do you tell the kids you love them? 212-433-9692. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you are all producers of this show, so visit the new page on our website called You Produce, State a Fact, pose a question, suggest a guest, a topic, or an entire series, or make a correction. See You Produce at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. My guest right now, Lucy Kalin, who's the executive editor of Marie Claire and now the author of The Perfect Stranger, The Truth About Mothers and Nannies. And your calls, all our lines are full with mostly nannies and a few mothers. We'll get back to your calls in a minute. Your book is not at all political. You don't discuss the role of race and class in relations between mothers and nannies. Do you think it's not much of a factor?
Oh, I think I do. I think there are some fairly meaty sections on that, and I think it's a huge factor.
Sorry, and I should say I didn't read the whole book, but I've looked at sections of it.
It is there, maybe about halfway through or three-quarters of the way through, and I think it's a huge issue. I mean, this whole question of, you know, the way we sort of address each other, that we're, you know, they're a member of the family, and you know, this is this incredibly intimate, you know, arrangement that we've got going, and they're a second mother and all the rest. Well, that whole issue of race is really the elephant in the room. You know, they often come from a very different kind of, you know, culture, different place, different circumstances. And, you know, in that sense, it's really not family. I mean, you know, when this job is over, they may go back to, you know, facing some, you know, difficulties that we can't even begin to imagine. And, you know, there are lots of sort of well-to-do people in the position of hiring nannies who will go off and do their thing. And, you know, that is sort of the tremulous kind of undercurrent, I think, of all of these relationships. It's a potentially very fraught kind of thing.
Rebecca in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. You were a nanny?
Yeah, I was a nanny. I have lots of stories, so if you have any questions. I was a full-time nanny on the Upper West Side for around the past, I don't know, 8 months or so, and now I'm a part-time nanny in Brooklyn. I left that job.
Do you hang out with other nannies and talk about the moms and the dads?
Well, actually, it's really interesting because Where I was a nanny in New York, a lot of the nannies were a lot older than me. I'm only 18, mm-hmm. and I'm actually taking some time off to save up so I can go to college. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge gap. I wasn't really I was allowed to talk to them, obviously, but they were very clicky. And since I was younger and since a lot of the time they thought I was her sister or that I was her mother, I was more like accepted to talk with the moms instead of the other nannies. So I thought there was a huge gap there with that.
Lucy, you want to talk about age?
I think it's very interesting. Are you a white woman also?
Yes.
I think that's a huge factor as well. I mean, age is, you know, they may have seen you as a sisterly figure, but also if a lot of the women are, you know, from the Caribbean or from Central America or the Philippines. You hear about it all the time that there is that cliquishness that forms, and if they think that you're, you know, a mother or a sister or an aunt or what have you, I've heard that it can be very difficult to kind of mesh with the nanny crowd in the park. It's a very, you know, for better or worse, probably for worse, it's a very stratified society that plays out there. Was that your experience?
Yeah, definitely. like even going to soccer practices or whatever, there were two tables. One table was for all the nannies.
Exactly.
The other table was for all the moms and me.
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca, let me ask you this. Do you think that you give the kids you take care of something different than the parents can give them?
I definitely agree in that, especially in the last situation I was in, just because the parents really weren't around a lot, and the girl was really vying for their attention. She had a lot of difficulties with that. That made my job extremely difficult. So I really felt that I was able to give her something that she wasn't really getting from her parents because they were always working. But that also made it really difficult when I left the job.
How did you say goodbye to that child?
This is an interesting story. Well, I actually went on about a two-week leave because I worked for another family who's in a band, and I went on tour with them for 2 weeks. And I had experienced a lot of problems with this job just because the responsibilities were much, much more than what I was originally told.
Everybody's in a band on this show. The nannies are in a band. The parents are in a band. Go ahead.
And the pay really was not adequate for the amount of work that I was doing, and it was unacknowledged. So I wrote a very in-depth email asking about all these added responsibilities and really wanting to get some feedback on the situation and wanting to give adequate time if pay couldn't be raised for them to find someone else. And I waited and waited for a reply. And finally, I just got one that said, we can end it here. And that was it.
Oh, my goodness. Mm. That's harsh.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was really difficult because I really worked very, very hard for this family, and I was expecting to have, I don't know, some questions answered, but
that strikes me as a kind of a classic story. I mean, there really is that, you know, that moment, that sort of rubber meeting the road moment where it's like, you know, yes, we've thrown around this word family, and we, you know, trust you like, you know, a relative and all of this stuff. But sometimes when the specter of, you know, dough comes up, you know, that is really when, you know, the whole thing can just come apart. You know, it's really, really tough. And and everybody realizes in a cold moment, you know, that this is a job.
And you wonder what the parents said to the kids in that situation. Mm-hmm. Rebecca, thank you for your call. Lucy Kalin, my guest, author of The Perfect Stranger, The Truth About Mothers and Nannies, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You know, in France, they think daycare, meaning care other than by the parents, is good for little kids because the parents are too close to the situation to always know what's right. And the kids benefit by having multiple adults in their lives, not just, you know, the tiny nuclear family of the modern Western world.
And that's an interesting theory, and there's probably a lot to it. I mean, a point that I make in the book is that I think one of the great benefits for children being cared for by nannies is they get a little relief from, you know, the overbearingness of, you know, parents who want everything in the world for them, who, you know, can sort of interpret their, you know, not learning the ABCs fast enough or not giving them a big enough hug or what have you as some sort of problem, emotional or developmental.
Or every little look on their face, are you okay, whatever.
Exactly. And children today, as we all know, can be very fussed over. And one thing that I see, certainly with my own children and with just observing children around the city, is, you know, they do seem to be sort of, you know, lighthearted and having a different kind of a time strolling down the street with their nannies than they sometimes do, you know, sort of sulking with their moms on the Midtown bus, which I've seen, you know, seen millions of times.
Just too much time together.
Yeah, and just maybe, who knows what the nature of the questions are, that the mom's really trying to root some stuff out and, like, you know, are you doing okay and what's going on and did you do the project and all the rest. They'd never get that from the nanny. It's a different relationship.
Also with us now, another mother who hires nannies. Stephanie, mother of an eight-month-old boy. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for coming on. Stephanie, are you there? Oh, you know what? I think I have to press that button. Now I think I have you, Stephanie. Are you there?
I am. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Why did you hire a nanny?
Well, I decided that I wanted to go back to work full-time after I had my son Jack in September. So the best solution for my husband and I, we felt, was to hire, you know, one caretaker to be there with him, basically 50 hours a week while I was working and while he was working. So that seemed to be the best solution for us.
Where's your nanny from and why does she work for you?
She's from Barbados, and she works for us because we interviewed about seven different people before we hired her, and she was actually the first person we interviewed, we should have gone with our guts immediately and just offered her the job, and we just felt that she would approach caring for our son with joy and with sort of enough discipline to not be totally spoiling him, although she kind of spoils him, but that's okay. And we felt a connection with her. We really wanted her to be a part of our family, and that's really what has happened, I feel like.
That's such a big part of the book, whether a paid employee can really be part of the family. How do you tread that line, and how do you think she does?
It's tricky, and I think the biggest thing for all three of us, and Wendy has been great about asking for this, and Joe, my husband, and I have been, you know, trying so hard to deliver it, is we've just tried to be extremely respectful of her and her time and her needs, and trying to make sure that, you know, we go a little bit above and beyond what is expected as much as we possibly can, and just respect her decisions. She has a lot of experience doing this, more than I do as a first-time mom. Mm. So,
do you learn from your nanny?
Gosh. Yes. she was the first person to discover that my son was teething. You know, she was the person to discover that he could do some things on his own that I didn't realize he could do. So, you know, seeking out her expertise and respecting her advice, and then just trying to give her some extra things, you know, trying to have food in the house that she likes, even those small things, we try to do as much as we can.
When you look around at your peers who also have nannies or other nannies and the way they're treated, I mean, we've heard a lot of very nice stories during the show so far. Do you think it's mostly so nice?
That's a hard question to answer. I mean, I think, you know, every mom and father and nanny wants it to work out well. You know, for us, it's important that Wendy be happy during the day, because that way I think she will do the best job she can with Jack. And she seems to be happy with him. She seems to be happy with the circumstances. And I think that's what all moms hope for.
Lucy?
I was just, an interesting point I think was raised here about, you know, the question of can a paid employee really be providing love and be part of the family in that way. I think it's something that we all wrestle with desperately, and something that I've always done to kind of, you know, check myself on this is, you know, I think about my own job, which is now at Marie Claire, and, you know, I would not be there if I wasn't, you know, getting paid. But the fact of the matter is I'm hugely emotionally invested. You know, I'm capable of great, you know, mood swings and happiness and joy and loyalty and all of that stuff. And so I always think about that in terms of our nanny.
It's presumably, yes, with your education and place in American society, you have the luxury of a lot more choice than somebody who's coming here from Uruguay or wherever.
That's, you know, almost certainly true. But I do think, you know, that the joy that we sometimes feel that Stephanie and I feel, and a lot of mothers feel, you know, that they see in their nannies, in our nannies taking care of our children. I just don't think it's all an act. I don't think, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, it's a very hard job, but there's a lot of fun to be had on it, and I feel like love actually does, you know, transpire. And that's, you know, something that I think is really important to remember when we're sort of wringing our hands about the idea that she wouldn't be here if we didn't write her a check.
Although, interestingly, you do quote from Mary Poppins in the book, and hardly the usual Mary Poppins reference. You cite her line, and realize this is a fictional character, but still, about why she really doesn't love the children. And she says, "What would happen to me, may I ask, if I loved all the children I had to say goodbye to?"
Well, the funny thing about Mary Poppins, of course, and I think a lot of us have had this experience, you know, we watched it as kids and then didn't watch it for decades, and then we, you know, rent it now for our own children, and we realize, my God, this is a really serious indictment of working mothers, of mothers not in the home, and Mary Poppins is only there to hold things together until this family can get a hold of themselves.
Stephanie, have you seen it lately?
Have I seen Mary Poppins lately? I tried to avoid one.
Yeah, you really should.
thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
Thanks.
And here's Birgit in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, Brian. I was a nanny. I started about 20 years ago when I came to this country. I came from Germany. And one of my jobs was working for a mixed couple. She was African-American. He was white American. And I worked there for about 9 months. And it was a little difficult. They had marital problems. So I left. I was telling them I was leaving. And within 2 days, they found a new nanny. And the last day, the last moment, I saw the wife, the mother of the child I took care of. She actually made some really nasty remarks to me because the little girl wanted an ice cream. She was 5 years old. She had an ice cream in the early afternoon. And then the late afternoon, she wanted another ice cream. I gave her another one. And when she asked for a third one, and I questioned, you know, I said to the girl, please, you already had two ice creams. The mother said to me, please give her an ice cream. You're not in a concentration camp.
Ay, ay, ay.
So that was a little nasty. And actually, that was the last words and the last thing I ever heard from her.
Yeah.
And that really hurt. But obviously, I worked again as a nanny. I worked for great families for 3-4 years. And then I got married to an American, and I lived happily after
in
Brooklyn.
Thank you for your call. A couple of quick things before you go, Lucy. As it happens, my brother wrote a book co-authored with Judith Sloan and Warren Lehrer called Crossing the Boulevard that included a profile of a nanny who was an immigrant from the Philippines. And among other things, she started organizing nannies on the playgrounds of the Upper East Side and eventually went to work full-time as a union organizer for $11.99, interested in organizing home care workers and other people who do personal services. You think that might be needed in the real world?
Sure, absolutely. And there's a lot of movement afoot in this area. There's a great organization called Domestic Workers United that works very hard to, you know, advocate for nannies and organize them, and they've got legislation up right now about fair labor practices and minimum wage for them. The thing that I think gets complicated for a lot of people is, again, there's a lot of employers, is there's this ambivalence and denial about what it is you're doing in hiring a nanny. And you haven't really, you know, gotten your arms around the choices that you made. And therefore, you know, you might, you know, not treat this person as a whole, in a wholehearted way, as a full-time employee in your house with all of the benefits and proper pay and all the rest that, you know, implies and requires.
Important message. 20 seconds. Your book is called Mothers and Nannies. Why not parents and nannies? Where are the fathers in this
picture? This is an issue for women. It really is. Dads are great. They're doing the best they can. I think they're doing so much more than maybe they did, you know, 30 years ago. But there's no sense in which when a nanny comes into the home, the father is hiring someone to sort of be his proxy when he's gone. It's really an issue between women. They're still, for better or worse, it is primarily the mother's job to make sure this thing goes well.
Lucy Kaylin, K-A-Y-L-I-N, author of The Perfect Stranger, The Truth About Mothers and Nannies, published by Bloomsbury. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, NPR's Robert Siegel here as a reporter today, not the anchor of All Things Considered, talking about that case in New Jersey where someone was freed from prison after 17 years for a crime he did not commit. Stay with us.